Okay. Let me wait till you get where you're going. So what do you three think you did to clear out this courtroom that way? 091611, United States versus Mitchell Fuchs. Am I pronouncing that properly?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning, Ms. Sellers. Good morning.
Thank you. The district court in this case imposed too long a sentence, in part by finding that my client, Mr. Fuchs, abused a position of trust. But the defendant, Mr. Fuchs, sent loan application materials to multiple lenders. He referred to it as a blast fax in his testimony. He had no special relationship with the lenders. In fact, he didn't even have a written agreement with them.
But he did occupy a position of trust with respect to the lenders.
Your Honor, I believe not as contemplated by the sentencing guidelines. The lenders knew he did not work for them. He was looking out, at least in part, for the borrowers. The commentary to the guidelines says the position of trust is characterized by professional or managerial discretion, that the persons normally are subject to significantly less supervision, and that the trust involved significantly facilitated the commission or concealment of the offense.
I thought the relationship between the lenders and the broker, in this case your client, was often memorialized with a written agreement. Is that not the case?
Your Honor, my client did not have a contract with the lenders. I think Your Honor's confusion probably stems from some statements in the briefing that lenders frequently had contracts with mortgage brokers.
So that may be true in general, but
exactly.
Not in this case.
Exactly. There is no evidence of any contract between the lenders and the defendant here, and in fact, that contract did not exist. The language on the face of the guidelines contemplates more than simply a commercial relationship in which one party simply believes the other one is telling the truth. This court has always found that to be the case. The lenders here testified about their dealings with brokers generally and explained that those brokers sent applications to multiple lenders seeking the best rates for their clients who were borrowers. There was no testimony, for example, about why they trusted Mr. Fuchs in particular. They had no special reason to trust him, as has been present in cases where this court has upheld a position of trust. The guidelines require that one party has reason to place a high level of trust in the other. They have a reason to let their guard down. The lenders here didn't do that. They knew Mr. Fuchs worked for the borrowers. He was not a trusted advisor to the lenders. It was not his job to look out for the lenders, and they didn't act like it was his job to look out for them. They didn't have not only did they not have a contract with him, but a couple of lenders testified their staff was supposed to always independently verify employment with a number they would obtain, for example, from 411 directory assistance. And at least one lender testified that they pulled their own credit reports. This court also has always required access or control over valuables before upholding a position of trust.
Well, that's not universally true. That's not a ironclad requirement that we've put on the application of this enhancement. That may be the fact pattern in a lot of the cases, but that's not any kind of a legal requirement.
That test certainly has appeared in multiple cases.
To elevate it to a test, I think, is probably over-reading the cases.
The control here, the government argues Fuchs had control over valuables just in the sense that he submitted paperwork that the lenders then used as a basis for loaning money. But it is usually true in a commercial transaction that one party induces another to do something, often to pay money, and an element of trust is generally present then. But this court has found in a situation like that generally that the position of whatever trust exists there is not sufficient to elevate the sentence under the guidelines.
Well, wasn't there an expectation that he would that this paperwork was put together and that there had been verification of employment and income? Wasn't that part of the duty of the broker to make sure that information was verified, that the package was together? And you're saying banks don't rely on that?
Your Honor, I'm saying that in commercial transactions and situations like that, one party undoubtedly relies that that what the other one is telling them is true.
Right.
But, for example, in the Koth case, a similar situation, this court found that the defendant had abused his commercial relationship by submitting fraudulent invoices to the bank. The bank certainly was relying on the fact that he was telling them the truth, that these invoices were not made up. That turned out not to be true. They were fraudulent. But this court said that was not enough under the sentencing guidelines. So as a perhaps common sense matter, it's true, obviously, that in a situation where paperwork is exchanged this way, one party believes it's true. But the guidelines have generally, at least by this court, not been interpreted so broadly. Again, the lenders here knew Fuchs was trying to get the best rate for the borrowers. They decided who got the loans, not Mr. Fuchs.
But my problem is that your argument implies that the lenders here assume the risk of Mr. Fuchs's fraud.
Your Honor, my argument is that the guidelines have consistently been interpreted to require something beyond an arm's-length commercial relationship where there was some particular reason to trust the other person, a party who entrusted their money to an investment advisor, for example, or a situation where someone certified in some way through a license or some other way that documentation was true. In this case, the commercial transaction between these parties, there was absolutely no testimony about, for example, why lenders trusted Mr. Fuchs above anyone else. The testimony was generic about their general relationships with brokers. These brokers, Mr. Fuchs testified, he sent paperwork to about 15 lenders at once, and again, those lenders knew that he was interested in the other side of the equation, which were the people borrowing the money. They had no reason to believe that he was looking out for them in particular in some way. They had no reason, any sort of special relationship of trust that's usually been required by this court in the cases. The district court relied on factors that, and I see that I'm running into my...
Can we go back to, because, you know, two other circuits have held that 3B1.3 applies to mortgage brokers who defrauded their lenders, because despite the fact that there were no written agreements, there is a reliance that flows from the structure of the mortgage industry itself, which sets a pattern process for loan applications over time, and that cultivates trust between the brokers and lenders. We had a situation over some period of time here, didn't we?
Well, Your Honor, there was no evidence that there was any sort of long-standing relationship between the lenders and Mr. Fuchs. And
what time period was it?
I believe the record would show that the activity at issue spanned 2 years.
Right.
And there was no evidence, though, that any particular – there's no record of consistent relationship with any particular lender in those – in that time frame. In other words, the record does not say that
– So the lenders that testified, it was just a one-time-only situation? Is that what the record is?
I think the record is at best unclear, but it certainly doesn't show a consistent pattern of constantly looking to Mr. Fuchs for their application materials.
And was that sort of a pattern evident in the other two circuits' cases?
Your Honor, in the Wright case, which is the Fifth Circuit case, the court, which, by the way, that court did say that it was a close call. Even that court said it was a close call. But the court did note that the brokers deal repeatedly with the same lenders, and they mentioned a process that over time cultivates trust.
But Wright also acknowledged that reliance is present in every case of fraud, so that 3B13 requires more than just ordinary reliance.
Well, and the other case, the Eighth Circuit case, the Septon case, does note that in two other cases it had previously upheld the enhancement in a purely arm's-length setting. Again, our argument is that that is different from this circuit's previous holdings.
Thank
Your Honor, I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Heller. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Versman.
May it please the Court, Counsel.
Can we go right to that last point? Is there anything in the record about the length of Mr. Fuchs's relationship with any of the lender victims or how he established his relationships with the lenders?
With regard to how he established his relationship with the lenders, Your Honor, Mr. Fox worked for Mortgage Solutions, which was the mortgage brokerage company in this case. Mortgage Solutions established the relationship with each one of these lenders. And there was a contract in place that was testified to by the representative of Argent Mortgage. And the representative of Argent Mortgage indicated in response to questioning at the trial that Argent Mortgage did not independently verify employment information, and that was due to the fact that under their contract with the mortgage broker, it was the responsibility of the mortgage broker to verify employment information. Therefore, Argent did not feel the need to do that on their own.
So one of the lenders in this case did have a contract with the defendant?
With the defendant specifically, no, Your Honor. The Argent had a contract with Mortgage Solutions. Mr. Fox was working for Mortgage Solutions.
You mean Mr. Fuchs? Is it Fuchs?
With deference to counsel, I was the trial attorney, and I believe he does pronounce it as
okay.
Fox.
All right.
Your Honor, there was a contract in place between Argent Mortgage and Mortgage Solutions. Mr. Fox was working as one of the loan officers for Mortgage Solutions. So I think, therefore, as far as Mortgage Solutions was concerned, it was certainly their understanding that their contract went to Mr. Fox as an employee of Mortgage Solutions, and he would be complying with the terms of that contract that they had with his employer. This is the issue before the court is whether this particular defendant, on these facts, whether the district court erred in applying the abuse of trust to this particular defendant. And that is a question that is reviewed for clear error. And I think that as the court reviews that record, you'll see that there was no clear error here. As far as analyzing that relationship, this court has said time and again that what a district court is to do is to analyze the circumstances from the perspective of the victim, and then also that the district court is to look beyond the formal labels to the relationship between the victim and the defendant and the responsibility that was entrusted to the defendant to the defendant by the victim. And in this case, I've already hit upon Argent Mortgage, which I think is the best example of that. Argent Mortgage entrusted to the defendant the complete responsibility for gathering and providing accurate and truthful employment information upon which Argent would rely to make his decision.
And that's were there contracts with all the other lenders, similarly with his employer, with Fox's employer?
Your Honor, I don't know that that was brought out during the trial, to be honest with
but
you.
But at least for this one.
At least for Argent Mortgage, there was.
And how many did they process relying on him? Do you have a sense of the numbers?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, I know the exact number. There were 14 loans that were charged in the indictment. Four of those loans were Argent Mortgage, so there was a relationship over a period of time.
All right.
They had more loans than any particular lender in the case.
And did this span this two-year period?
With regard to Argent, Your Honor, my recollection of the record is that it spanned certainly a six-month period towards the end of the crime, but I cannot say that it went beyond the last 6 months.
Thank you.
What does the contract actually say?
I have not reviewed the contract, nor was the contract placed into evidence, but there was testimony from Tammy Carnes, who was the representative of Argent Mortgage, and she testified that the contract requires the mortgage broker to verify employment. The question was that was put to Ms. Carnes was, does Argent Mortgage independently verify employment? She said no. Why is that? Because we have contracts in place with the brokers, such as Mortgage Solutions. Under that contract, the broker is required to do that. Therefore, we didn't feel we had to do that. But that's the only part of the contract that was put into evidence.
So we really don't know what the contract says.
Other than that testimony, that's correct, Your Honor.
Was there a reason the contract wasn't admitted into evidence?
I don't know that either side felt that there was a need for the contract at that point. This, as Your Honors are well aware, this is a sentencing issue that was presented later on, and I don't know that either party thought to develop by putting the contract into evidence at the time of trial.
Well, right, but if you want this enhancement, you've got to prove up the nature of the relationship, and that depends at least in part on what the contract says.
Well,
so,
Your Honor,
if there's failure of proof here, because we don't know exactly what this relationship was because there isn't evidence of it in the record. I mean, we don't know that the contract says, the brokers do the due diligence on all these lenders and we're relying on you to, do that according to industry standards, et cetera, as in effect establishing some sort of an agency relationship that could be said to have been a position of trust that was abused so that the enhancement applies.
While the contract is not in evidence, I don't necessarily agree, Your Honor, that there was a failure of proof on this issue. Again, we do have the testimony of Ms. Carnes, who is an employee of Argent Mortgage, was an employee of Argent Mortgage for a long time, was familiar with these contracts, and she testified that this was what the contracts required. And I don't know that the defense did not present any sort of contrary evidence, nor did they challenge that evidence in the district court. So I don't agree that we had a failure of proof on this particular issue.
Although she's saying now that there's no contract. I mean, as I understood it, she was saying there was no contract. And I don't know if she meant personally just between him directly or, we understand now the company had a contract for, and it covers at least four, but she's certainly challenging that, it seems.
I did not understand Ms. Sellers' argument to be that, and perhaps she'll correct me when she has a rebuttal, but I understood her to be saying that there was no contract between Mr. Fox personally and any of the mortgage companies.
Yeah, actually,
and
that
is true.
I understood that the representation to be that there's no contract between any of the, mm-hmm. or evidence of, we should say, focus on the evidence, there's no evidence of a contract between any of these lenders and even the defendant's employer, the brokerage, or the mortgage broker, but just this generic testimony that we had contracts with our brokers, which is not specific to this defendant or even his employer. The full chain isn't there. It's just a generic statement. Oh, we had contracts from one of the lenders. We had contracts with all of our brokers. We relied on them. That's not going to cut it.
Well,
if that's all there is. Am I correctly characterizing the testimony? I haven't gone and looked at it, but it sounds like that's what you're telling us.
I would have to go back and look at the testimony. I believe that she did indicate that I don't know that she specifically said that we have a contract with Mortgage Solutions.
Okay.
But she did say we have contracts with brokers, okay. Which Mortgage Solutions was.
Let's say she didn't say that with respect to any of the specific either the defendant specifically or his employer. What else is there to support this enhancement? if her testimony is that generic, just that we had contracts with our brokers?
Well, I think that that testimony is sufficient to establish that there would have been a contract here. But in addition to that, what we have here...
Forgive me. What testimony is sufficient?
The testimony of
that,
Ms.
That we generically have this? We generically have contracts?
With mortgage brokers, which Mortgage Solutions was a mortgage broker.
Without pinpointing this particular company?
Well, without some sort of agreement in effect, then...
You can finish. It's just that we can't divine what that agreement is. That's the problem we're having. You're assuming there's some kind of agreement, but it was never put in. It was never put in evidence. I don't know how you got around there were no objections, so I guess the best evidence didn't come in at all, but the contract would tell the story, and we can't just assume there were contracts and agreements. Not for purposes of this sentencing enhancement, because that's what we have to tie it to. See, that's the problem. That's the problem in the case law, is that if it's just general reliance and it's not something personally done to induce them, or there was no sort of relationship, or there wasn't like a multiple trust thing going on, you know, so we don't have any other evidence, right?
Well, putting aside the issue of whether there's a contract at this point, what you still have, Your Honor, is the absolute and undivided trust that was placed by Argent in this particular mortgage broker. And their testimony was, we don't verify employment at all. We rely upon the broker to do that, which in this case was Mr. Fox. So we have the trust that's being placed in Mr. Fox by Argent Mortgage in this case. So we have that trust relationship. Again, if you look at it from the perspective of the victim, they are placing the trust in this defendant to make sure that this gets done. And the defendant, knowing the practices of this lender, created false documentation to get these loans approved for his own personal benefit. Your Honor, I see that my time is up.
It is. Is there something that you won't sleep tonight if you don't tell us?
I can't say that, Your Honor, but under the facts and circumstances of this particular case, the district court did not commit clear error by applying the abuse of trust enhancement to Mr. Fox.
Thank you. Marshall Bryan, how much extra time did we give the government?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Well, you add that to Ms. Sellers' time, please.
Thank you.
We're equal opportunity torturers.
I appreciate that. Just to be clear, the evidence that the government on this contract issue about Argent is on page 4 of their appendix, 370 of the trial testimony, which says, per the broker agreement that's signed by the broker, they understand this responsibility, meaning verification of employment. There is no testimony about a contract with either Mr. Fuchs or his employer, nor is there any such contract in the record. And, in fact, that same lender, Argent, testified, as is in our appendix at page 38, that Argent pulled its own credit reports. One other lender, Novastar, said, and this is at page A50 of our appendix, said that their employees all the time were supposed to use an outside or third party as opposed to using what was on the loan papers. That's why, in a situation like that, I've argued that reason to let their guard down, that evidence that they were really trusting this person as a trusted advisor to them, is just absent in this case.
Well, is he arguing that this kind of poor spot checking enabled his fraud? Is that your argument?
My argument is that if in a situation where you've just put complete trust in this person, you don't pull all your own credit reports and you don't require your employees to use independent third parties to check who they're really employed by. So, you know, this is purely for this sentence enhancement. It's not about whether that happened. The point is the guidelines require that there be some special trust, and those, he was not a trusted advisor to them under this situation.
Right.
But the reason that the lenders might have been lax in their review is they felt they could be.
But there's really not evidence to support a good reason for that. Again, we go back to, in a commercial transaction, you submit paperwork to someone, like in the Koth case, the bank has reason to think it's true in the sense that they're a bank customer, someone they're used to, someone they know. It's still not enough. And the lenders here could have had this contract that would have provided, I think, this connection that's lacking, but it's not there. And they also did not rely on him exclusively. Your Honor, I apologize. I see my time is up. Can I continue?
Finish your thought.
They did not rely on him in any sort of exclusive way, and they knew his job wasn't to look out for them. I mean, that's sort of the cold reality of it.
He's bringing the lenders borrowers.
That's right.
That's what this relationship is.
That's right.
He and his employer, as other mortgage brokers, are in it for themselves, and they're bringing the lenders borrowers.
This would never survive
a civil trial.
The lenders knew that. I mean, that special relationship, that's what I'm focused on, and that's why I say that's missing. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both very, very much. The case will be taken under advisement. Our next...